All right, welcome to another deep dive. This time we're going to be really getting into it with plastics.
Plastics.
Specifically, what makes them so perfect for injection molding. We've got some excerpts from this article. It's called What Property of Plastics Makes Them Suitable for Injection Molding? Pretty straightforward title.
Really to the point.
And by the end of this, you'll not only know why plastics are everywhere, in manufacturing, but also you'll be able to impress your friends with, some fun facts about material science.
Yeah, you'll be able to look at everyday objects and have a whole new appreciation for the thought that went into making them.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure. So the article starts off by, talking about these four key properties of plastic that make them great for injection molding.
Yeah, it calls them the Fantastic Four.
The Fantastic Four.
Yeah, like a superhero team of properties for
Exactly.
manufacturing.
So first up, we've got plasticity.
Okay.
Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking
Yeah.
plasticity. Oh, it's just about being bendy.
Right. But
It's a little more than that.
yeah, it's more nuanced than that.
It's really about a material's ability to permanently change its shape under stress.
Oh, okay.
So, imagine heating up a piece of polyethylene. It softens up, then you mold it, and then when it cools,
Boom.
it holds that new shape.
Keeps that shape. Yeah, the article was saying that's why it's so easy to, create those really intricate designs with injection molding. Can you imagine like trying to do that with metal?
I can't even fathom it. I mean, you think
Yeah.
about Lego bricks
Yeah.
or medical devices, this ability of plastic to flow and then solidify into these complex shapes. I mean, it's completely changed the game.
Absolutely. And speaking of flow, that kind of brings us to our next property, fluidity. So think about pouring honey versus like peanut butter. That difference in, thickness, how easily it flows, that's fluidity. And you need that smooth flow to get, every detail in the mold. Yeah, that's a great analogy. But I think it's important to remember that this is happening, at a molecular level.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, like, take polystyrene, for example. It flows beautifully because of its long chain-like molecules. That's why it's used in a lot of those, really detailed designs. Yeah.
So there's a molecular reason for all this. That's wild.
It is.
The article actually has a table that shows, the fluidity of different plastics and what they're used for. It's
Yeah.
pretty cool. So basically, like my cheap plastic spork is a testament to molecular engineering.
In a way,
You think
yeah.
about it like that, it's kind of mind-blowing.
Absolutely.
But, creating all these intricate molds, it takes a lot of heat. And that brings us to property number three, thermal stability.
Okay, so this one's all about, taking the heat. Literally, injection molding happens at really high temperatures, sometimes over 200 degrees Celsius.
Wow, that's hot.
It is, and some plastics just can't handle that.
Right, they just melt into a puddle.
Well, they might decompose. They might discolor or even release harmful fumes.
Right, so it's not just about a melty mess, it's also a safety thing.
Exactly.
So which plastics can handle the heat? Like, what are the superstars?
So polycarbonate's a good example. It's got excellent thermal stability. That's why it's often used in things like optical discs.
Oh yeah, you wouldn't want your DVD melting in the player.
You
It
wouldn't.
makes sense.
And safety's a huge factor too. I mean, some plastics can release some pretty nasty stuff when they get heated up, and that's obviously bad for workers and the environment.
Yeah, big in the air.
So thermal stability is really key for a safe and, environmentally sound manufacturing process.
Okay, so on to the last property. And this one's a little bit strange.
Okay.
Cooling shrinkage.
Cooling
The
shrinkage.
plastic cools down and it shrinks. That
Yeah.
sounds like it could be a big problem.
It can be if designers aren't careful about it, but it's totally natural for plastics to shrink as they cool down. So engineers have to actually factor that into their designs, make sure that when it shrinks, the final product's still the right size and shape.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's kind of like baking a cake,
Oh, yeah.
You don't want it to sink in the middle when it comes out of the oven.
So they basically have to overcompensate,
Right.
make the mold a little bit bigger, knowing it'll shrink as it cools.
Yeah, the article gave the example of polystyrene. It shrinks quite a bit, so you need a bigger mold to compensate for that.
So there's really a lot more to plastic than meets the eye.
Yeah, it's really a hidden world of science behind these materials.
Yeah, and I think, for me at least, I always thought of plastics as kind of simple,
Right.
but there's this whole complex world behind them.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, but we've been talking about all these properties, all this science, but why does it matter to someone who's not an engineer? or a designer? Like, why should we care about all this stuff?
That's a great question, and it's something we're going to get into more in the next part of our deep dive.
Okay.
But for now, I'll just say this. Understanding these four properties, it really gives you a new appreciation for all the objects around you. Like, you start to see the world with a fresh pair of eyes.
Yeah, it's like suddenly realizing that even a simple water bottle is a feat of engineering.
Exactly.
Yeah. But we'll have to save that conversation for part two.
We will.
Welcome back. So we've talked about, you know, plasticity, fluidity, thermal stability, and cooling shrinkage. The Fantastic Four of injection molding. But now I kind of want to see how this all plays out, like, in the real world, you know?
Okay,
like,
yeah.
How do these properties actually affect the things we use every day?
Right, so let's take polycarbonate, for example.
Yeah.
We talked about how it has, you know, great thermal stability.
Yeah, it can really take the heat.
Right, but what does that actually mean for how we use it? Well, think about things like safety helmets or eyeglass lenses.
Right.
You need them to be strong, durable, and definitely shatterproof.
Yeah, you don't want your glasses breaking every time you drop them.
Exactly.
What about those really sleek car headlights? Those are polycarbonate too, aren't they?
They are, yeah. Polycarbonate can handle the heat from the bulbs.
Right.
And it's impact resistant, so it's perfect for, you know, the front of a car.
Plus, it's transparent, so you can still see the light.
Yeah, and that transparency also makes it really useful for things like medical devices.
Oh, yeah, where you need to be able to see what's going on.
Exactly.
It's pretty amazing how one material can be used for so many different things.
It really is versatile.
Yeah, it's like the ultimate multitasker.
It is.
Okay, so what about other plastics? Are there any that stand out in terms of their properties?
Well, ABS is a good one.
ABS.
Yeah, it stands for acrylonitrile-butadiene-styrene. Acrylonitrile-butadiene-styrene. It's a mouthful.
It is.
But it's known for its impact resistance.
Okay.
Toughness and flexibility. It's not quite as heat resistant as polycarbonate,
mm-hmm.
but it's still pretty durable.
So it's like the workhorse of the plastic world.
You could say that.
So where would we see ABS in action?
Well, think about Lego bricks.
Really? Legos are ABS.
Yep. That's what gives them their durability and that satisfying click when you snap them together.
Huh. I never would have guessed.
See, this is what I mean about looking at everyday objects with a new perspective.
Yeah, it's like suddenly you realize there's all this science and engineering behind even the simplest things.
Exactly.
Okay, but you mentioned that table before about the fluidity of different plastics.
Right.
I was really struck by that, like, you know, realizing that even my plastic spork is a result of molecular engineering.
I know, right?
But how does that table actually translate into real-world decisions? Like, how do manufacturers actually use that information?
Well, imagine you're a manufacturer and you're trying to decide which plastic to use for a new product.
Okay.
You've got to think about things like the complexity of the design, how strong it needs to be, and of course, the cost. The fluidity of the plastic is a big factor because it determines how easily it will flow into the mold and fill all the little details.
So if you're making something really intricate with lots of fine details,
right,
you'd want a plastic with high fluidity like polystyrene.
Exactly, because it'll capture all those little nooks and crannies.
But if you're making something simpler, like a storage bin,
right,
you could probably get away with a plastic that has lower fluidity.
Like polypropylene.
Okay, so it's all about choosing the right material for the job.
Exactly, like picking the right tool from a toolbox.
Makes sense.
There's no one-size-fits-all solution.
So each plastic has its own strengths and weaknesses.
Right, and it's up to the engineers and designers to figure out, you know, which one is best for each specific application.
It's really fascinating.
It is.
And I guess that's why plastics have become so ubiquitous, like they're literally everywhere.
They are, and for good reason.
Yeah. But, you know, with all this talk about the amazing properties of plastics,
mm-hmm.
it's easy to forget that there's a downside, too.
Yeah, the environmental impact.
Right. We've all seen those, you know, those images of plastic pollution in the oceans and landfills.
It's a big problem.
Yeah. It's a reminder that our convenience comes at a cost.
It's a complex issue for sure.
And it's not just about the pollution itself.
Right. Different plastics require different recycling processes,
yeah.
and some are easier to recycle than others.
And even if a plastic can be recycled.
Right.
It doesn't mean it will be.
That's true.
So it seems like there's a lot of responsibility on everyone involved.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, manufacturers need to think about recyclability when they're designing products.
Mm-hmm.
Consumers need to make informed choices about what they buy and how they dispose of things.
And governments need to put policies in place to support sustainable practices.
Yeah, it's a big challenge, but it's one we can't ignore.
Absolutely not. I mean, the future of our planet depends on us figuring this out.
Are there any, like, promising developments on the horizon? Anything that gives you hope for a more sustainable future for plastics?
Well, there's a lot of exciting research happening in the field of bioplastics.
Bioplastics.
Yeah, these are plastics made from renewable resources.
Oh, okay.
Like cornstarch or sugarcane.
So they're not made from petroleum.
Right, exactly. And they offer a really promising alternative to traditional plastics.
I've heard about bioplastics, but are they, like, as strong and durable as regular plastics? Can they really be a viable replacement?
Well, the technology is always evolving, and we're seeing more and more bioplastics being used for all sorts of things.
Okay.
They're becoming increasingly comparable to traditional plastics in terms of their performance.
So it seems like the future of plastics is full of, possibilities.
Yeah, both exciting and challenging.
Absolutely. Okay, so we've talked about the properties of plastics, the environmental impact, bioplastics. But we haven't really talked about the design process itself.
The molds.
Yeah, like how do engineers actually create those molds that, churn molten plastic into all these amazing products?
That's a great point. It's like we've talked about all the ingredients but haven't actually seen the recipe yet.
Exactly.
And that's where we're headed next.
Mold design.
The art and science of creating the tools that shape our plastic world.
Okay. Stay tuned for part three, where we'll dive deep into the world of mold design. Okay, so we're back and ready to talk about the final piece of the puzzle. Mold design.
Mold design.
Yeah, it's like, the behind-the-scenes magic that makes all those plastic products possible.
It's where the precision meets creativity. I mean, every little detail, every groove in that mold, it all determines the final shape, the texture, even the function of the product.
Okay, so walk me through this. What does the mold design process actually look like?
All right.
Well, do they have, like, tiny chisels and they're sculpting these molds under a magnifying glass or something?
Not quite. It's much more high-tech than that. It starts with an engineer.
Okay.
Using sophisticated 3D modeling software.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they create a blueprint of the mold. Mm. But this blueprint's not just about the overall shape.
Right.
It includes things like gates, runners, cooling channels.
Gates and runners. Sounds like a track and field event.
Well, in a way, they do guide a race.
Oh.
The gates are the entry points for the molten plastic.
Okay.
And the runners are like pathways that make sure that the plastic is distributed evenly throughout the mold.
So it's all carefully controlled.
Exactly. And then you've got the cooling channels, making sure that the plastic cools down at the right rate and evenly.
Right. So you don't get any like warping or defect.
Exactly. You don't want any of that.
It's pretty amazing when you think about it. Like all this thought and planning goes into something that most people never even see.
It really is the hidden code behind our plastic world.
Yeah. And that code can get really complex, especially when you're talking about like, a smartphone case.
Rare.
With all the buttons and cutouts and different textures.
Yeah. Or those intricate Lego creations.
Yeah. With the moving parts and all that.
I know. It's incredible.
Oh.
The molds for those must be crazy detailed.
They are, yeah.
So mold design is really like a combination of engineering and art.
Absolutely.
It's like problem solving on a whole other level.
It really is.
Okay, so we've got these incredibly detailed blueprints, but how do they actually make the molds? Well, is it like a futuristic 3D printing thing?
3D printing is definitely being used more and more these days.
Okay.
Especially for prototypes and small-scale production.
Mm.
But for mass production, machining is still the most common method.
Machining. Oh. So they're like carving the mold out of metal.
Basically, yeah. Highly precise CNC machines.
CNC.
Yeah, it stands for computer numerical control.
Oh, okay.
They're used to carve out the mold from a solid block of steel or aluminum.
Wow. That's some serious precision.
It is. And even the material of the mold matters.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So steel molds are super durable.
Okay.
They can handle millions of injection cycles, but they're expensive.
Right.
Aluminum molds are lighter and cheaper, but they might not last as long.
So it's a trade-off.
It is, yeah. Cost versus durability.
So they have to choose the right material depending on, what they're making and how many they need to make.
Exactly.
Well, this has been a fascinating journey. We've gone from the basic properties of plastics to the complexities of mold design.
It's been a deep dive.
It really has. And I feel like I have a whole new understanding of plastic.
That's what we were hoping for.
Yeah, like even just picking up a, a plastic object. Now I'm thinking about all the steps it took to get here.
Right. From those four fundamental properties to the intricate mold that shaped it.
It really is a testament to human ingenuity and our understanding of materials.
It is. And as we move towards a more sustainable future, I think it's important to remember responsible consumption and recycling.
Yeah.
The choices we make today, they're going to shape the future of plastics.
Absolutely. And ultimately, the health of our planet.
Exactly.
Well, this has been an amazing deep dive into the world of plastics and injection molding.
It has.
Thank you so much for joining us. And as always, stay curious.